Artist Benjamin Timpson joins the program now. Welcome back to Express Yourself, Benjamin.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Do you prefer Ben?
Ben is fine, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Ben is good.
We talked just about exactly a year ago, and at that time you had 4 exhibitions all at the same time, 2 Down Valley and 2 Up Valley.
Mm-hmm.
But you're back because you have another piece in this year's Valley Visual Arts Show. Let's talk a little bit about that. I know it's from one of the series that we went into real depth with the last time we talked, but let's talk a little bit about it. What do you have in this year's Valley Visual?
Right. So this year I put in one of the newest works from You Changed Nature series, and it is an 8x10 work, and it's, again, layers of glass, layers of resin, mixed with plastic, wheat, butterflies, wasps, bees, all to form a composition of a woman stumbling through a garden.
Stumbling.
Yeah, that's what she's...
Not dancing, but stumbling.
No, she's tripping on the plastic.
Okay. Well, you know, it's all grist for the mill, isn't it? Oh, that's funny. It probably bears repeating, as I said, we went into it pretty deeply last year, but these are all, a lot of this is found objects.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. Yeah.
The insect parts, and I'll talk a little bit about the process just kind of in a elementary way.
Right. So, yeah, first I find the organic material out in the world, like the hardware store bag for the plastic. The grass on a hike over the weekend, the bees that died in the window seal that somebody gave me. And then I do drawings about what I want the composition to look like. So I start with drawing, and I drew the figure stumbling. And then the trick is to then do each layer of glass with either plastic or the wheat or the organic material that's going to match up with that drawing. So the figure is going to, she's made out of wheat, and then she's kind of surrounded by a plastic garden. And her hair is a raven feather.
Oh.
And so that gives the illusion of hair. And so when the viewer looks at that composition, they don't need to necessarily decode all of that instantly. They can just look at that and see, oh, that's a woman standing. And for this new series, for this new piece in the Carbondale Art Show, I built a custom frame for this. So I'm no longer working with the towers like we talked about last time.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to go back to the wall piece, and I wanted to put light into the composition in time. So I wanted to use light as part of the composition, only to try to use time as well. So when you look at the composition, it is backlit, but there's an Arduino microsensors that have a timer on it that I program to slowly go on, stay on, get a little bit brighter, go back to a little dimmer, and then completely off. So the piece slowly can breathe, and that's a new concept that I'm just kind of tapping into with, you know, the Metamorphosis Project and this next chapter in the You Change Nature series. But I wanted to not just have the light on or not just have the light off. Like I said, I wanted the light to interact really slowly with the viewer.
So depending on when you pass by the piece in the gallery on the wall, it's going to look different.
Right, exactly. That's the idea of to like kind of play off that attention span of the viewer. And also, like you said, when and where someone walks into to see it, they'll get a different first impression every time.
Oh, and if they're attentive and they come back and it looks different, they're going to scratch their head and they're going to go, wait a minute.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's intended, obviously.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Because like I told you before, like the average attention span at a work of art is like 17 seconds. We're surrounded by billions of images. As a survival mechanism, we have to like look, judge, move on. Look, judge, move on. You know, it's part of our language, photography, and visual stimulation. And so not to like judge that, because like I said, it's a survival mechanism to do that. But to just play off that idea of something changing that's on your wall really slowly, it's, you know, something I've been thinking about.
Yeah. Wow. It adds a whole new element to the process.
Right.
Is that did that start because I know that when you work, you're working on a light table. And so you make these pieces and then they're on the wall and they look different than as you were making them. Is that maybe the genesis for this idea?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I would work, the light would be on and then I would turn the light off and I would look at them. And some people would come by and be like, well, I like it off. And then other people would be like, I like it on. And I was like, well, you know what? Let's design. Exactly. Let's do both. And then let's work more on the actual design element of the light in the composition itself. Like the light is really important and in the composition. And up until now, I've only just been having the light consistently on, you know, and now to be able to play with that is like a whole nother part of the composition.
So you can program each light, for want of a better word, table, portable, the portable piece.
Yeah, the
on
light
the
panels.
Wall. You light panels, is that what you call them?
Mm-hmm.
You can program each one differently. So different pieces will require a different lighting scheme.
Right, exactly.
Oh,
yeah, so you can, you know, that's the plan for September, is to design the entire room where one butterfly portrait will be fading on while the other one fades slowly off. So yeah, just to keep moving in that direction of slowly working with light as part of the photography sculpture installation. It's a subtle aspect, but it can be extremely powerful if you know, used right, or incredibly cheesy too. You know, like you gotta,
oh, so
you gotta
to
walk
that
fine line. Yeah, exactly. Oh. You don't want to walk into a dance party. You know.
So, oh, interesting. So what qualifies as cheesy?
Well, not cheesy, overstimulated.
Okay.
For the viewer, like too much. You know, like when you see a flashing lights. You know, that gets your attention, but not in a positive way. When you're stuck in traffic and the left hand signal of the guy in front of you just blinking, and all you can do is stare at that. You're like, I hate this. You know, like I hate everything about where I'm at right now. You're just like ting 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 ting.
Oh.
You know, like that. Those are bad light stimulations, and we get those all the time. You know. And then our phone, you know, is slowly backlit up, slowly backlit down, just when I pick it up, and you don't even think about it. It just does it, right? These things that are around us already are used to get our attention through light, and I thought I would incorporate that into the art. And like I said, it has to be subtle, and it can't be in, like I just explained, in an annoying light.
Yeah.
Light can get really annoying really quickly.
Huh.
Because we're sensitive.
Well, if you think about it, that's sort of what Mother Nature does when she puts on a particularly splendid sunset, you know?
Absolutely.
It's
yeah.
changing right there in real time. And
Yeah, there's nothing like a great sunset, you know? It's
yeah.
incredible.
Huh, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. And so the piece in the Valley Visual is a light panel piece?
Yes.
It is?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah, and it does, like I said, slowly fade on, stay on, and then slowly fade off. And that's kind of a new thing I'm kind of experimenting with. Because I look at every show as like kind of a chance to experiment with the work and then reaction. Kind of like playing like a live show if you were a musician. Kind of like trying out new songs at like particular venues that you're comfortable with.
You know? Uh-huh. Engaging. Do you watch audience reaction?
Absolutely.
You do?
Yeah,
what
I
do.
Do.
You, oh, wow. What do you look for? What are you looking for in that?
You know, like it's just neat to watch people interact with artwork. And some people are very obvious. Some people are very conservative. You know, some people judge very quickly and move on. See how the viewer is engaging with the work. I like to see if there's that sense of wonder, you know, if they're like, oh, wow, look at that. Or like, oh, John, come check this out, you know, like, because those simple, oh, check this out, is how art and culture travel through time and space, of those simple, oh, you got to check this song out I heard, or on Instagram, like, oh, look at this guy's feed. Like, these are the ways that culture and art travel, is through these real simple, quick interactions from person to person.
Is there room in there for the slow interaction?
I guess would absolutely. Be. Yeah. And contemplation. And yeah, exactly. That's what the light can be, you know, used for, you know, is to taking your time with the work, or anybody's work for that matter.
Well, as I said earlier, we went into great depth in about those pieces that were in Glenwood at the CMC gallery there. So we don't have to go there. But since then, it looks like you've started up two new series. One is called About Face, and the other is Metamorphosis. Let's start with the Metamorphosis. What is the Metamorphosis series? Tell me about it.
Right. The Metamorphosis Project is a project very close to home, and it is a portrait project using organic material again, but only for this project, I just used butterfly wings. And the butterfly, you know, obviously is a symbol in every single culture. Every single human culture for the past 30,000 years has had a symbol for the butterfly, whether it be like hope, love, rejuvenation, the soul of lost friends and family, reincarnation. The butterfly is an enigma and a symbol for mystery throughout time. And so I wanted to use that specifically for these portraits of Native American women. And not just Native American women, but Native American women who have been either raped, murdered, or are currently missing on and off the reservations in our country right now. And so the first thing I do is I contact the family members of the missing woman or the survivor, and I establish a relationship. I tell them who I am. I tell them about the project and what I want to do. I want to create a portrait, and using only butterfly wings. And then I start making that portrait. Each portrait takes about a month to 2 months, and I work on a sheet of glass. And then each finished portrait is about 300 to 500 pieces of butterfly wings.
Well, you say I work, but I saw pictures that you've got a big mask on because you don't want to be breathing on these things because they're going to blow off where you've got a place.
Right, yeah. So I have to wear a dust mask, and I do gloves and then tweezers and then razor blades because it's like working with gold leafing. It's butterflies are amazing. They're one of the most beautiful insects on the planet.
Well, that's what's amazing about monarchs is that they're so gorgeous, and they batter themselves to get across the ocean to where they go.
They travel thousands and thousands of miles.
That's just mind-blowing.
Right. So like the butterfly can be the symbol for fragility, but also for strength and endurance. And so I wanted to use that conceptually as, you know, that's the reason why these portraits exist now.
And Metamorphosis, which is why you call the series Metamorphosis.
Right. To take a very tragic and a heinous situation and then try to focus on the positive and the light of and the beauty of that woman.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And so are you making these light panel boxes for the Metamorphosis photos too?
Yes.
I mean portraits?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah, so I'll design a light panel and then, again, use the Arduino microcontrollers to slowly turn the light panel on, keep it on, and then slowly turn it off for a length of time. And again, the light there is, you know, used conceptually as like a candle or to show the beauty of the butterfly wing through different lighting scenarios. So when a butterfly wing as you probably already know this, and most people already do, that a butterfly wing isn't just painted on. You know, there are tiny, tiny microscopic scales that the butterfly wing is composed of. And so from different ways of looking at it, you can see it in different ways. So kind of like a diamond, how a diamond's going to, any way you look at a diamond, it's going to reflect that light in a different way. Butterfly wings do the exact same thing.
Oh.
And so what I wanted to show with this, with the light panels, was that as the light slowly comes on, the butterfly wing will turn a completely different color with the light that's transmitted through it, rather than when the light is just reflected off of it. It shows a completely different portrait. And again, like you said before, that is also part of the metamorphosis of the project. So.
And yet another aspect of that metamorphosis, at least from what I've gathered, and maybe you could speak to this, but after you've created that original, you're also photographing it and you're scaling it up very painstakingly to create a big, what 4x6?
Yeah, about 4 foot by 6 foot. Photograph. Yeah, exactly. So the same idea that we talked about last time was when I take the original and then do like 20 to 50 photographs with a 100 millimeter macro lens, and then stitch those together and then print off a large, I still do large emulsion transfers. So I'll do a transfer onto UPO paper, mount it to aluminum, and then seal that in resin, and then sand that resin down to get a nice matte finish for the ultra large scale, highly detailed butterfly portrait. And then those are hang together for the original, will be the 5x7 on glass, and then the large portrait across the room. So.
Oh, okay. So you see both.
Right.
Have you actually had a metamorphosis show yet?
No, I'll be showing at the Art Base in September.
September. Mm-hmm. Nice. And it'll be the Metamorphosis show.
Absolutely. Yeah.
How about that?
There should be 6 portraits there.
6. Mm-hmm. Huh. So I heard you say 1 or 2 months. Is that 1 or 2 months of 40-hour weeks?
No, I break it up, you know, because I work full-time for Anderson Ranch.
Right.
You know, so it's in my part-time, you know. I tried working. Let me back up. So I was really excited when I first started this project because it tackles a very strong current issue that's happening right now in our country, and it deals closely with me as a person and, you know, my family. But I was working on it for a while, and then I received the fellowship from Yale University, which was amazing. So I got that news, and they want me in February to come present that work to them and the undergraduate program. And they're going to bring in the Native American Women's Coalition and the Native Department at Yale to all get together to help try to raise awareness about this issue, which is great. But I got so excited, I'm looping back here, that I tried working extremely hard on one of the portraits, and I kind of blew out my thumb. Like my muscle between my thumb and my forefinger started twitching, and it wouldn't go away. So I had to go to the doctor, and they're like, "You have tendonitis in your thumb and finger now. You need to take a break." And I was like, "Oh, not now!" You know, it's like the beginning of a basketball season, you know, and like boom, you blow your ankle out, and they're like, "Sorry, you're done for like the next 2 months." Wow. And it was like,
That's what I call suffering for your art.
Yeah, pretty much. Yes, yeah. So I just worked my hand too hard because, again, you have to hold those tweezers at very precise, you know, places, and then you have to affix it to the glass, and you know you can't breathe. Well, you can, but you're behind the mask. But it's a very involved process. It takes incredible concentration. So I dose it out now. I do about an hour and a half a day, usually in the morning, right when I wake up. Uh-huh. Kind of as like a exercise or meditation routine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. That's a good way to start the day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Meditation with butterfly wings. I can't think of anything better.
No, it's beautiful.
That's great. And, you know, I think I read that you do safe sourced butterfly wings. What does that mean?
Right. That's one of the first questions that always comes up is, where do you get your butterflies from? Well, you know, they die you know, people would give them to me. Like, I found this on my the hood of my car. Do you want this? You know, the average lifespan of a butterfly is between a month and like a year. Most butterflies live between 1 and 3 months. And I get them from two butterfly sanctuaries, one in North Carolina and the other one in Australia.
Huh. So they're actually growing the butterflies.
Right. Yeah. They farm, you know, like a butterfly farm.
That's wow. That sounds like it would be a good project to increase employment in the Amazon, for example. And I say the Amazon because right. several of your portraits have a lot of blue in them. And I know for a fact that blue butterflies only exist in the Amazon. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah. They're a beautiful blue morphos, they call them. And there's actually like, you know, like 50 different types of blue morphos. You know, not all blue morphos are the same, you know? So, like, there's blue morphos that are incredibly, like, opaque, that have no transparency to their wing. And then there's blue morphos that are almost crystal clear. Mm-hmm. And so it's amazing as I do this project to learn more and more about the different species of butterfly.
Depending on how the light is hitting those blue, if it's opaque, like you said, it's not going to look blue, or is it going to, varying shades of blue depending on the light behind it and the light in front of it.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it sounds like there's all levels of metamorphosis going on this.
Oh, really unique compositions, mostly because of that. Any angle you look at it with any light source behind it, it's going to change.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So.
Huh. Wow. That's really interesting stuff. So what, you were just sitting around one day and you said, I'm going to make portraits of butterfly wings of Native American women.
No.
No? Yeah. Trace that timeline for me.
Right. I'll show you. Okay, so how it happened was my wife and I saw the movie Wind River and were really moved by it, how there's like not even a statistic for Native American women who go missing. Mm. On the reservation. About, you know, 2 months later, my mom did a DNA test, and it turned out that she's part Native American.
And she didn't know.
Well, she had a clue in our family. That was kind of like a strange thing in our family. You know, we never really talked about
kind
it. Grandpa never talked about it, which, you know, makes sense. You know, when they were growing up in Salt Lake City, Utah, people would come to their door and say, hey, you're an American now. You only need to speak English. You know, this is what we do here. You know, so it was intense for my grandma and my grandpa to, like, you know, come to Salt Lake City and try to be like everybody else. So I now see, you know, like, I kind of see why they did what they did and then didn't really tell us anything. Anyway, but ancestry, you know, like now we all do DNA tests. So it turns out that, so we saw Wind River, turns out that, you know, and I've always had an extreme love for nature. Nature has always been in my artwork in any way, shape or form. Nature is the ultimate artist. You know, I always, you know, you walk through a forest, it's like, why would I be a sculptor when I can walk through the forest? It's just gorgeous. When true nature is undisturbed, it's like a Zen garden, you know, where we try to get there, we come close. But anyway, so those two things happened. And then I was in the studio and I was working on another piece where I was kind of like playing with the idea of like a king and the jester and those things. And I was kind of like making this king's face out of parts of orchid and other things. And at the same time, I kind of had on another corner on my light table, I took like three butterfly wings and I cut them into squares. And I was like, when you cut a butterfly wing into a square, it's an amazing thing happens. It takes this natural pattern and kind of puts the human element in it in like one gesture. And so I was up there and then I was having a conversation with my wife and I was like, this is a tragic situation that's happening. I want to do something. And then like we were both kind of up there in the studio at the same time. And all of a sudden I was like, oh my gosh, why don't I just do portraits of Native American women out of these butterfly pieces? And I started with Banff County Jane Doe, who was found in 1979, who didn't have an identity and no family members to, you know, she was just found. She's a Jane Doe. Just the bones were found. And they only did, like, police sketchings of her face. And I thought that was interesting, too, that there would just be this rough, vague outline of her face. And so the first one I wanted to create in that same way of, like, just barely roughing in a human's face out of these butterfly wings. And the first one was the hardest one because, you know, I didn't have a mask. I had dull blades and like, didn't realize that every time you touched a butterfly wing, those little micro scales go get on your fingers. And so it was rough, but I cobbled it together and I got it to work. And then I contacted Carolyn Felicity Antone, who's a survivor, has an amazing life story, and I contacted her directly, and she also runs a nonprofit called Young Women Are Sacred, and I asked to do a portrait of her, and she said absolutely. So, I keep asking anybody, you know, who has like one of those stories. I want to continue making the portraits.
And you've dedicated a portion of the proceeds from the sale of these pieces to that nonprofit.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If and when I sell them. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Right back to her nonprofit.
What a beautiful project, Ben. That's really cool. Metamorphosis. And you were saying that that show will be at the Art Base.
Yes.
Nice.
From 9:13 to 10:04.
I saw some of the videos before that you had, and it looks like there are different videos, or maybe I came across them. I don't remember on your website, but I was impressed with, and hearing you describe your pieces again, I'm impressed again with the meticulousness that you're dealing with on these pieces. I'm wondering if at some point you're going to throw up your hands and go, I need to go make a spiral jetty or something, right, you know, yeah. Some major monumental thing.
Yeah. No, I think that all the time of like, I have to take breaks. I'm like, wow, why am I doing this? You know, like this is ridiculously detailed, you know? But then when I stand back from it and take a break for a little bit, I'm like, wow, it's so much better to take my time and to focus and then to make a high quality object than it is just to slap a couple things together and call it something, you know, like I appreciate that. I think that's awesome. And yeah, maybe in the future I will work on a much larger scale for a project that might need that scale. But right now I really like working in the intricate detail.
Well, the other thing that's interesting to me about that is you made that process yourself, and nobody else anywhere is doing that process.
Right.
It's your process.
Yeah.
It's your signature.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It's your art. That's your art.
Right.
And right now, you don't feel the need to move away from that into something else.
No. You know, I'm always, you know, cooking on a lot of different ideas all at one time. And so, like, some ideas do incorporate the light panels, the latest ones do. But I'm still painting, and I do, you know, a lot of watercolor and oil, and just to get away, like you said, to kind of take a break from this work. You can't do it consistently. So I work on a couple of different projects. The Daily Head Transplants, the sculpture project that I'm working on with the Colorado College. Yeah, the Daily Head Transplant. Yeah, because, you know, we're saturated by media, you know. Every single day there's a 5,000 news stories, you know. Now, see, even I'm making one now, right now. So,
I know, you're adding to the camera.
Yeah, exactly. I'm adding to the media storm. But, yeah, so that project is a sculpture project, and it's completely different, you know. So it's like I 3D scan my head, and then I take screenshots of what's happening in the news, and there are some amazing things happening in the world right now. You know, in the last like 10 months, so much has happened in this world. And like, since we're so oversaturated with it, we don't realize how much is happening all at one time, because like I said, that survival mechanism to just like process and then get it out, process, get it out of your head.
Yeah. Anyways, I guess, we've had our minds blown continuously day after day after day. After a while, there's nothing more to blow.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah,
you just kind of, it's like you go numb. Dribble. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah. And so on each, so like I said, I 3D scan my head and then slice that up and use a laser cutter and do acrylic slices of each part of the head. And then on each slice of the head, I am laser cutting in the headline. And then when you look at the head from straight on, it's a portrait or a bust. But when you explode the head from a side, you can see all the headlines that are happening or that have happened in that time frame.
So those headlines are living inside your head.
Right, exactly.
Oh, that's cool. That's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Well, in the time we have left, look at that. We're already above half an hour. How about that? It just goes like
really
that,
doesn't
it? Really
edit it down.
Yeah, we'll have to edit it down. But I want to touch base on one of your other series projects, the About Face. And your artist statement says it goes from daguerreotype to digital in one gesture. So maybe you could explain the About Face and what's involved with that.
Yeah, so that project was, I had the show at Colorado College there, and that started with I made a 16x20 view camera, an ultra large format view camera from scratch, and then used a Carl Zeiss Jena lens from the 50s. And it's got like a 5 foot long bellows, and it gets beautiful paper negatives. And so you take darkroom paper and you just put it into the back of that camera that I made. And then I use strobe lights and I do extreme close up portraiture of a person. And then strobe lights go off and then the face is recorded onto that paper negative. Then I bring those all together as in like 48 portraits and I keep them in the negative. And so that negative view of a face is kind of alien. It's recognizable, but you don't know who it is. And so then everybody's smartphone has an accessibility option on it to invert your phone and invert your camera to look at the negatives. And so when somebody does that with their phone, they see the positive face on their phone of the negative. So then
that's hanging on the wall.
Right. The negative's on the wall, and they use their phone to interact with that negative. And
oh, wow.
The negative turns into a positive on their phone. So the viewer completes the photograph in a way. They complete the interaction.
Interesting.
And so that's why I say like it's a way to go from daguerreotype to digital in one gesture is because I am using paper negatives with a person's smartphone. They together complete that photograph. So photography becomes interactive. It becomes an interactive experience rather than just that's a photograph on a wall. So.
Interesting. And on your website, which, by the way, is goodnight35.com, you've got your page of the negatives there, and when you hover over it with the cursor, you see the positive.
Right.
And that's interesting in and of itself. One of the interesting things to me about looking at the negatives is, a couple, of course, are the eyes. So if you've got dark eyes, your eyes are really white,
right,
a negative. Mm-hmm. And if you've got blue eyes, less white, I guess. But, some of them are very intense. And, when you hover and look at them, yeah, there's some real intensity there with Richard. But if you look at the negative, oh, my God, look at those eyes. Oh, my God, look at those eyes.
Yeah, it's a really fun project, that the About Face film.
The other thing I noticed, too, is some of them, let's see, where is she? It's one of the girls. There it is, Grace. The negative, it looks like she's breathing fire. Of course, that's just a trick of the light. Obviously, mm-hmm, she's being top lit, like the light is above her and in front of her, so her nose is throwing a shadow on her mouth. And but in the negative, it looks like she's breathing fire.
Right. And what's great about what you just described was what I was trying to get through with the viewer, of to get the viewer to actually look and think about how light is hitting a face. And the best way to do that is to look at it as a negative.
Yeah.
You know, we don't teach, you know, negatives. We don't see a lot of negatives in culture anymore. You know, like we don't use negatives in photography anymore. But when you look at the negative and you can see those shadows and highlights in reverse, you can start to pick out what those shapes make. And then when you see it in positive again, all those shapes go away and you just see the identity, you know, like, so it's a really neat way to get the viewer, to look at light and shadow and how beautiful that really is on a face.
Well, the other thing it does, looking at just the negatives, it sort of erases any racial, like you can't tell by looking at these negatives, you can't necessarily tell if they're black or brown or white.
Exactly.
Or Asian.
That was another major part of the project, was to try to like take that whole judgment away, you know, and to just focus on the beauty and the topography of someone's face. Mm-hmm. Because again, like, not only is, you know, it takes that away, but as you look at the positive through your smartphone, you're looking very closely at a stranger's face, almost intimately close, you know? And we don't do that. When we sit on the bus, we don't look at other people because it's taboo. You know, you keep your head down, you know, you move along. But if you really did just stare at anybody's face long enough, you'd be like, wow, there's some really neat things going on in your face. And I wanted to kind of try to, you know, boil that up into the in the project as well. So those two things.
That one's exemplified by that boy with the freckles.
Bo. Yeah.
I love the negative of the freckles.
Yeah, freckles turn into almost stars, you know, or a galaxy pattern, like the solar system across his face.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there it is. Yep, there it is. Bo. Wow. Well, look at that. We've just filled more than a half an hour of talk about your art, Ben. And I'm impressed again, as I was last time. You're one of those people that's constantly working and questing, and I guess that's who you are. Have you always had that, or did you discover that along the way?
It's always been there.
Huh.
Yeah, I've always been working with art, always been curious about art ever since I can remember. Yeah, absolutely. Huh. Drawing, you know, painting, yeah.
Will you be at the Valley Visual opening on Friday?
Absolutely.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe we'll see you over there.
Yeah.
Ben Timpson, thank you for joining Express Yourself.
Hey, thank you very much for having me, man. This is great.